me being interested in anyone other than Anthony Masterson as my co-host is another example of irresponsible, fake news, 2 exclamation points. I am John Elway. Welcome into this podcast. Fake news, says John Elway. John Elway, fake news. 2 exclamation points. Can you imagine
being
that delusional? I've said this time and time again. You and I have had this conversation. I'm very glad that I became a Broncos fan when I was a child, so I was ignorant and oblivious to everything anyway. B, when there was no Twitter / internet. And C, when all I really cared about was like athletes being older than me and being good at sports, because man, I would not have liked him.
I mean, the thing is, especially in my line of work, you know, I work in sports television. I meet a lot of very famous ex-athletes, you know, pop stars, rock stars, rappers, whatever. They all run through here a lot. The trick is to never, ever meet your heroes.
Absolutely. That is the absolute truth.
That's the trick on how to get through a nice, well-adjusted life of watching sports.
And, you know, like sometimes you'll meet one of them and be like, oh, man, this person is even cooler than I imagined. Like, you know, it's a rarity.
Oh, yeah.
But
no,
then,
they're definitely out there.
Then you feel really great about it. But for every one of those, like, the ruining of one that you held in high esteem for a long time is just not even worth it.
Yeah.
Just not even worth it. I met John Elway when I was 14. My best friend's little brother played on a peewee football team with Jack Elway, and they won like the Super Bowl.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he was great too. And I remember we went over to his house, and like my buddy Travis and I are standing in the kitchen, and all of a sudden John Elway walks in. It's just the three of us, and he goes, "So what are your guys' names?" And we're like, "Oh my god, it's John Elway!" And this is like, we're 14, so this is the summer of '99. So they're coming off basically of 2 Super Bowls,
right.
The 2 years, 3 years prior, so that was like a good time to have met him, because man, if I met him once I became like a sentient adult, fake news, 2 exclamation points.
Yeah, you know he donated like millions and millions of dollars to Trump's campaign.
I think he hosted a fundraiser or a rally the night before the election, too.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Denver sports news, that's what we're talking about. Because as Anthony noted on Twitter yesterday, the Rockies have had a bajillion off days in the
second
half.
They've had 5 off days in the last 2 weeks, including the rainout day, of course. But like 5 off days in the last two weeks.
I was talking to John Gray about this the other day in the clubhouse, because he said what he felt like kind of threw him off when he got back from the DL was he wasn't really starting on a regular 5-day roll for a while. Like, he had a 9-day layoff for the All-Star break, then it was a 6-day layoff with an off day.
And they kind of had a 6-man rotation.
Right,
there
yeah, exactly. And so now he sort of feels like he's back into a groove, because he's been throwing with regularity, and that's borne itself out over the last couple of starts for him, because he's been fantastic. But, yeah, it's been so weird lately.
It really
strange.
Has been.
Your Colorado Rockies, as we welcome you into episode number 113 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
Your Colorado Rockies open up a series at the Miami Marlins coming up tonight at Marlins Park. The Rockies 16 games over 500 at 65-49, thanks to the Arizona Diamondbacks loss last night, Thursday night. They are now a full game up in the National League wildcard race. They are 5.5 Woo-hoo! Games clear of the oncoming St. Louis Cardinals, who we're talking about here tonight. But
technically, they are 6.5 games clear.
Oh, yeah, true. The D-backs are 5.5 games clear. The Rockies would be 6.5 clear. But I am super, super pumped for this episode today. We are doing for the first time ever.
Yes,
we're
for
doing
an entire episode.
An all ask PDP today, which I'm super pumped about. Yesterday, we tweeted out, we're recording tomorrow. We haven't done it in a long time. Send us your
yada,
questions.
Yada, yada.
We got like 60 plus questions submitted, and really, really good questions too.
And not all just Oliver Howard.
No, exactly.
Tier one PDP fan, Oliver Howard. Usually he's not on Twitter much anymore. God bless his heart. but he rolls on. We're doing Ask PDP sometimes and just throws like 30 questions.
It's like we put the bat signal up and Oliver signs on to Twitter and submits 30 questions, which he did yesterday. But even outside of Oliver's questions, we got like 30 replies or like 60 replies. And then you factor in Oliver's additional 30. But we got a lot of good ones, and I'm pumped for this, man. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, let's do this.
All right.
If you're going to figure out all we're talking about, we're going to get to those topics anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing.
In the course of these questions.
Right. Like anything that we were going to discuss today comes up in these questions anyway. So yeah, I'm quite pumped about this.
Let's do it.
Let's dive in. Well, let's get started. We're going to start with a good one from our good buddy Clive Bixby, who is at Poseidon's Fist on Twitter. And now his name reads name cannot be blank, because that's what Twitter apparently tells you when you try to leave it blank. But he submitted a couple. One of them, I think, hits a question on the head that a lot of Rockies fans have started wondering about as of late. Quote, trading cargo last offseason now seems like an obvious missed opportunity. What bold move this offseason might be a similar missed opportunity?
Missed opportunity.
Because cargo has not been good.
Oh, boy. Cargo's been one of the worst players in all of baseball this year. I won't say players. His defense has been fine.
Yeah.
Hitters.
Yeah.
Hitters for sure. It's been roof stew.
Not great
for cargo.
Not great, Bob.
Well, the Rockies have a very interesting offseason ahead of them. Now, in theory, hopefully, God willing, they will be coming off a playoff appearance. Because they are, like you said, 6.5 games clear of a playoff spot right now. They're 16 games over 500. They are playing very good baseball right now. They're gonna get Jose Reyes's money off the books. They're gonna get Carlos Gonzalez's money off the books. They're going to have money to spend. Now, if they want to use that money to extend, say, an all-time great third baseman and give him a lot of money, that might be a good idea to spend that. If they don't do that then, I think that might be a missed opportunity, considering what Nolan has done each of his first 4 or 5 years in the big leagues. You're seeing the maturation of a superstar, and you're seeing it in a way that he's only seemingly getting better. Nolan Arenado is one of those crazy players where he's been in the league for, this is fifth year, I think.
This
is his fifth year. And every single year, everything has gotten better. You look at his OPS every single year, it's risen, which is hard to do for the first 5 years of a career. His average has risen every year. Say for 1 year, it was .287, two consecutive years. His OBP has only dipped 1 year. Now it's at its highest it's ever been. Slug percentage has gone up pretty much every single year, or at least stayed constant. If you don't extend him here to a big, big contract. Now, I'm not saying 10 years, $200 million. I'm not, or $300 million. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, give him reasonable superstar money, because he is a superstar. He's going to win his fifth straight Gold Glove to begin his career. He's going to be probably a top three candidate for the MVP in the National League this year. If you don't extend him now, let him go through, you know, his finish off his next year of his contract, his 2 year, whatever, $11.5 million he signed for last season. If you let him go here and don't give him a big extension, that could start to sow the seeds of some disappointment in Nolan Arenado. Of course, you know that he likes winning. The team is winning. They should be good next
We're
year
so
as well.
Tired of
and
winning.
For the next couple of years. So tired of winning. All the winning. They're so tired of it all. But if you don't get in there, you might start to see him go, hey, you know, I'm kind of doing everything I can here, and I'm not really seeing the rewards for it. I want to stay here. He clearly seems to like Denver a lot. I think it'd behoove the Rockies to give him an extension this offseason and not start to plant little seeds of doubt in Nolan's mind, like, oh, you know, well, if he does end up becoming a free agent, I'm sure the Yankees will come calling, or the Red Sox, or the yada, yada, yada. That's how that works. So I think this year it'd be a missed opportunity this offseason if they don't give Nolan Arenado an extension.
Okay, I'm going to go with, because of the way this was phrased as what bold move, I'm going to go with a bold move that's going to be very unpopular. And again,
Al Freeland will be in a starting rotation.
He will. I agree. and then you'll get lambasted for that for 6 months when it doesn't happen, because people forget what bold prediction means. So this is bold. This is not realistic, more than likely. It's not probably going to happen. But in the vein of bold predictions, this is what I'm going to say. And it ties into a question that we got from Kevin Johnson at Kevin ICT Rocks on Twitter. Kevin asked this question, then somebody retweeted it and said, "Are you effing kidding me?" And Kevin said, "Yes, sorry, this was a dumb question. Roast me tomorrow on the podcast." And I responded and said, "I don't think it's that dumb of a question." And his question is, quote, "Should the Rockies look at market on Blackman after the season to maximize his return, or should they extend him?" If we're going if we're going bold moves over the offseason that could seem like a missed opportunity, I think the Rockies should listen. If somebody came along with an offer like what the Chicago White Sox got for Adam Eaton, Charlie Blackman has turned himself into the best center fielder in the National League. He's also 31 years old. He's in the last year of his contract in 2018, and the Rockies have a lot of talent behind him. Raimel Tapia plays center field. That's what he's done basically the entire season in Albuquerque. Gerardo Parra is under contract for another year. Theoretically, David Dahl is going to be a real human being at some point, although maybe not.
Dude,
that's what throws a wrench into
Stop talking about ghosts here.
I know. Myths of human existence. That's what throws a wrench into this, because for a time, you would have thought, well, you know that Tapia and Dahl are your long-term guys. Dahl's back on the disabled list. In Albuquerque, he hasn't played since July 31st. We're not really entirely sure why. Mm-hmm. But I think if we're talking bold moves, again, if this is just going out making wacky predictions, I think you listen on that front. I think you listen on the market for Charlie Blackman, because he is older and he is a guy who is a free agent after 2018. All that being said, I don't think it'll happen. I don't think the Rockies will be actively shopping him by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think if we're talking about bold offseason moves, we could see that in a couple years as, man, they would have been better off selling him at peak value. The value's never going to be higher.
Right. It'd be the dumbest thing to not listen.
Right. Yeah.
Now, if you want to go and sign Chuck to a 5-year extension or whatever,
sure.
I'm saying. But you have to understand, he is older. Mm-hmm. He's 31. You know, you see those contracts don't necessarily age very gracefully.
Right.
The Rockies don't have the luxury of having aging gracefully contracts. Let's just put that in a very blunt terms.
Right.
They got rid of Tulo's before it became a complete albatross,
right,
which it is now for the Blue Jays. They are screwed with that contract.
Yep, not great.
They don't sign guys for 7-8 years anymore,
right?
Because they've learned their lesson. I mean, when they've done it, Mike Hampton 8 years, Tulo 7 years. They have gotten out of those contracts so damn fast it'll make your head spin. Now. But you always say, oh, well, Nolan Arenado's not going to break down. You don't know that at all.
No, and he's much younger. I mean, that's the thing.
Course.
What people – that's kind of the bummer about Chuck, is he's turned himself into such a dominant player, but he got a late start on this in his career.
Yes. He was, 26 when he made his debut?
Yeah, he was a college draft selection, so he wasn't coming out of high school young the way Nolan did. So he is – you know, I mean, he turned 31 on July 1st. If you sign – a 31-year-old outfielder to a 5-year extension, by the time Chuck's 35, 36, he's not your center fielder, you know?
Probably not. Yeah, so it's – yeah. If you can get somebody to give you a ton of prospects with Charlie Blackman this offseason, it is a terrible move for the PR, especially when you think you're going to be a contender next year, and you really should be.
And especially when –
2018 is your window.
And he's a free agent after 2018 anyway. Unless he signed to an extension, obviously.
Right.
But, like, last year, the Chicago White Sox got two of the top pitching prospects in baseball for Adam Eaton. Charlie Blackman's a better player than Adam Eaton is. Adam Eaton's younger, and he's under team control for longer. But Charlie Blackman's a better player. He's got a better ceiling than Adam Eaton does.
That's the thing. With the contract, the years on it,
right.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find that kind of return.
Right.
There's no arguing that he is better in a lot of facets of his game.
So that's if we're going bold predictions.
Yeah.
Do not at me in February when he's still on the roster, because I think he is still going to be on the roster. But if we're going bold predictions, there we go. And that's why I don't think that was a dumb question at all.
That's bold as love. All right. So let's move on to one of our good buddies of the podcast, Nate Kreckman.
Yeah.
He had a fun question for us. Who are your top five Rockies that you'd want to big spoon you?
So, are we talking about current roster or all time?
I think all time.
Yeah.
You got to go all time. Because my number one, this is an easy one. It's Brian Bohannon.
Yeah, yeah. Brian Bohannon would be a good one. I'm gonna go into the Wayback Machine for mine. You know who I think the best big spoon in Rockies history would have been?
Go on.
Benny Agbayani.
Ooh, yeah.
He's just like a big old teddy bear, Benny Agbayani.
He is.
Like a big pudgy. He was like 6'2", 220. Like a just a soft, friendly dude. I feel like Benny Agbayani would be a fantastic Big Spoon.
I completely agree
okay,
with that.
Good.
I would also say someone like Garrett Atkins.
Yeah, could be.
You could get the Big Spoon and then just like whisper about pitcher wins in his ear.
And MAGA. Garrett Atkins is another weird member of Twitter. Yeah, that could be. Yeah. So
we got two more.
I do feel like on the current roster, and maybe it's just because I
yeah,
love
let's get
him.
One current guy.
I love
yeah.
him in every possible way, but I think Adam Ottavino would just be fantastic. Because you know that when you lay there, you'd be talking about like 18th century philosophers or recounting a story that you just read in the New Yorker. Like, it'd just be so intellectually stimulating and brilliant. You
yeah.
know, those conversations you probably have with Nicole, laying
yeah,
in bed.
All the time.
You're holding her.
Yeah.
They're the best conversation. You feel like life cannot get better than this. And then she falls asleep in the middle of a sentence at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's the cutest goddamn thing you've ever seen. Like, those I feel like Adam would
totally.
Be that. I feel like he would be that.
I'm going to go with one here. Old blast from the past here. Bruce Ruffin.
Okay.
But only if he had the mustache.
I was going to ask, what's the mustache status?
Only
Bruce
if he has
Ruffin
the mustache.
Here.
If he's clean shaven, I want no part of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with my last one. Levon Hernandez. Short-lived Rocky Levon Hernandez.
Yeah.
I think it would be terrific. Yeah. Again, similar build to Benny Agbayani, just a big dude, soft built. I think it'd be terrific. Like laying into a big pillow.
See- You could sing, and he will be Levon.
Okay, now on the flip side of this, the worst, who I think would be the worst cuddler in Rocky's history.
Alex Cole.
Okay, Alex Cole would be bad. Mine's going to be controversial. I think Todd Helton would be a terrible cuddler.
Ooh.
Todd Helton's just so businesslike. He's like, I can't imagine there's much tenderness in Todd Helton.
That's a good point.
Try
and if you got a bad night's sleep, he would switch everything up. Yeah,
singing the
because he's so superstitious.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Like if you were the little spoon and then he went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, you'd never be the little spoon again.
Yeah,
ever.
Like Alex Cole was like 6'1", 184.
Yeah,
like, he's just all
he's
like
a string bean. Yeah.
Like Dex was kind of like that too.
Yeah.
6'4", 204. Can you imagine all those legs?
Daddy
like,
long legs.
Yeah, can you imagine like those legs wrapping around you?
No,
like
no.
Oh,
I also feel like Gabe Kapler, short-lived Rockies outfielder Gabe Kapler, would be really bad. Eric Burns, I
like
think, would be really
I
bad.
I feel like Gabe Kapler's like his chest.
Yeah,
would, like just push.
It would
off
just
the
be
bed.
Painful. It would be like all hard
like
surfaces,
sleeping
muscles,
on concrete.
And,
yeah,
yeah, and corners and weird.
Like I know
no
it's
things.
Good for your back sometimes, sleep on concrete, but like you know,
yeah, no,
I don't want it.
No, I'm good.
We have gone a lot farther on this question than I thought we would.
Well,
that's a good question.
That was a good question.
Nate Kreckman, man.
At Nate Kreckman on Twitter, and the best sports talk show host in Denver who actually talks about baseball. Okay, we'll move on to another great friend of ours, Hayden Kane at HW Kane. I love this question. Quote: who runs the most like a dad on the Rockies currently? Because his point was all time. Todd Helton held that mantle for
long, for sure.
And he
for
set
sure.
the standard, as Hayden put it. So who nowadays on this roster runs most like a dad? I like how we tease this as like, we would have talked about all this stuff anyway.
Well, listen, we would have talked about all this stuff anyway.
That's probably true. That is probably true.
I mean, like Ryan Hannigan?
Yeah, Ryan Hannigan does. That's true.
Because you kind of have to if you're built like Ryan Hannigan. No disrespect, he's a catcher. I mean, if you're a catcher, you kind of got to run like a dad.
Yeah, you sort of have to.
Yeah.
I go DJ LeMahieu. Which is kind of weird because DJ's like an athletic dude, but DJ he totally runs like a dad. Like when DJ's legging out, trying to leg out like an infield single, he just looks like such a goof.
Yeah.
Nolan runs a little awkwardly too.
Yeah.
And Nolan's just a big dude. Like he's toting a lot down the line. He's 6'2", 205.
Garrett Atkins did the same thing too. I know brought up Garrett Atkins twice, but he also ran like a dad.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. By the way, if we're going to go with little spoons, just to go back to that, Alexion Arista.
Sure.
Oh, what a little
spoon. You just be like, you put him in your pocket.
Exactly. He's 5'6", 160 is what he's listed as. Yeah. No, he'd be great. Okay, so you go Ryan Hannigan, all right, and I go yeah. and I go Deej. Okay, I like it.
All right, here's a real question from our pal Stephen Mangold at SMangold4. Will Chad Bettis, A, get back into the rotation this year, and B, play a substantial role on this team this season?
Not only will he get back in the rotation, it looks as though it will be Monday. According to a report from Nick Groke of the Denver Post, Chad Bettis could be back in Major League rotation as of Monday. He was activated from the disabled list and optioned to AAA Albuquerque. And in total, he has made 4 starts there, 4.82 ERA, but his last time out, 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 2 strikeouts, no walks. He threw 70 pitches, 46 for strikes. That's really good because he's efficient. His outings have been pretty good so far. And even though he's taken losses, hashtag pitcher wins, he hasn't given up more than 3 earned runs in any outing in which he was given kind of a leash. His first start, he struggled against Salt Lake, 2 2/3, 6 hits, 3 runs, threw 62 pitches in 2 2/3. But since then, he's gone 5 1/3, 5 2/3, and 5 innings while keeping the pitch counts pretty well down. He had 71 pitches in his first outing, 70 in his most recent outing over 5 1/3 and 5 respectively. So, A, he'll be back. B, I think he's going to play a massive role because what he does is he provides you the opportunity to comfortably use Antonio Senzatella out of the bullpen. And as of this week, I think you see Tyler Chatwood has a very strong potential to be a bullpen contributor. We've talked about this time and time again. Yeah. Tyler Chatwood is really good the first time through an order.
Through the lineup,
he is really bad after that. So if you can use him in short bursts, why not? And that's what Chad Bettis does. He provides you that opportunity.
As long as he throws strikes, yes, that's the most important thing with Tyler Chatwood. If he throws strikes, he can be dominant a first time through the lineup because his OPS against first time through 654, second time through 835, third time through 979. Basically, hitters become elite the second time they see Tyler Chatwood in a game. You can make that, when we see him one time in a game, man, that can be awesome because he's got that big 12-6 hook you don't normally see from guys out of the bullpen. He's got that good sinker, can get ground balls. He could be a very big weapon coming out of that bullpen, especially pair him up with a guy like Senzatella as well. If he could be a multi-inning guy coming out throwing 98 with a nice little hook that we saw against Cleveland the other day, he was throwing some really nice curveballs in that game. That's kind of a new pitch he's been working on they were talking about during the broadcast. So if he can get that, that's a pretty good 1-2 coming out of the bullpen. But if they want to make Senzatella a starter again, if he can get that third pitch, that's been his issue all year, that third pitch. He's only had 2 good pitches all year. You get that third pitch, that curveball to go along with the slider and the fastball that hits 98, okay.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah. You couldn't be more excited about this as a storyline for the Rockies because it's so cool for Chad Bettis. If Chad Bettis was coming back from Tommy John surgery or was coming back from a leg problem or something, you'd be happy for him. You'd be excited. But the fact that Chad Bettis has beaten cancer right now and is on the verge of returning to a major league rotation in August of a year in which he had chemotherapy just months ago is pretty damn cool.
What an amazing story that's going to be. It's going to be so awesome to see him out there. If it is Monday or if it's later in the season, doesn't matter. It's going to be awesome to see him pitch no matter when the time is.
Exactly. Okay, we'll move on to another one of our good pals on Twitter, but I never know his actual name because it's never on Twitter, but at AZELT90 underscore, whose name is currently Do Good Rockies, which we would agree with. How many eggs are you going to have for breakfast? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to maneuver this question a little differently. Let's say you wake up, you go to make some eggs, you're going to have bacon, you're going to have toast, you're going to have whatever. How many eggs do you go with in that circumstance? Like, you're not cooking for Nicole, just you, just one
just
meal.
In general.
Just one meal, yeah. Just in general, you're going to make scrambled, you're going to make whatever.
How generally many 3 eggs.
Okay,
3 eggs.
Okay. I would say I usually do the same. Sometimes it's 2, like if I'm like, oh, good, I look like a fat tub of goo, which is generally the case. Okay, so we're both 3 egg guys. There is Sam's Number 3 downtown. Sure. I think all the locations have this, but they have a dozen egg breakfast burrito. And the same friend with whom I met John Elway once.
Is that like a food challenge thing?
It should be if it's not. I think it is. But he ordered it once and finished the entire thing when we were like 23. And I still, to this day, think about that and want to die.
He's still working it off, I'm sure.
Oh, got him. And he's like, he's one of those dudes, he's just ripped, like six pack, jacked,
like,
one of those people.
Like Michael Phelps, who consumes like 12,000 calories in the morning.
Exactly.
Like for breakfast.
Ugh, God, I hate it so much.
No, dude, I'm stuck on like serious wedding diet right now. Yeah. We're coming up like 5 weeks out, 6 weeks out.
Yeah.
Right now, I think it's 6 weeks from tomorrow. So, you know, I'm not like going like full kale juice cleanse, yada yada, whatever. But I'm working out like all the time. I'm making sure I'm like not consuming more than like 1,500 calories a day, because like all you want to do is just make sure you don't look fat for like one day in your entire life, because you're having like 14,000 pictures taken of you on that day.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
I'm going to be
sure
in those pictures.
Like,
how do you feel about
that? I don't have like, you know, neck fat.
Yeah.
You know,
true. I'm going to be in for the rest of your life, you're going to have pictures up in your house that have me in them. How does that feel for you?
No, we have a really good Photoshopper.
It's me, ironically. You just turn it over to me. Can you cut yourself out of this, please?
We're just going to turn you into John Elway in every picture.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. And I'm just wearing a MAGA hat.
Yep.
Fake news, two exclamation points.
No, we're actually going to put a MAGA hat on you on every single picture that we post.
Are you going to have one of those photo booths? You should have one of those hats.
We are a photo booth. Yeah. Oh, God. Good God. Well, I'm sure we can just go to any gas station in Arizona. That's probably true.
That's probably true. Oh, gross.
Yeah, so that's God, I can't even imagine eating that kind of thing. Like, you know, they're bringing back Man versus Food now, and the dude who's
doing it now, the new guy, right?
He's not the same as Adam Richman, the old guy used to do it.
Adam Richman like went on a body shaming thing on Twitter once and got fired.
Yeah, and then like called someone the C word.
Yeah,
like, great.
Could you imagine? Like, you get paid to travel around the country and just eat amazing food. How are you that angry in life about anything? Like, your job is to travel around. Like, I have this persona. I come off as being nihilistic and I hate everything, whatever. I got a pretty sweet gig. Like, I get paid to watch and write about sports. I feel pretty, on the professional side, I feel pretty fulfilled in life. Like, if you're Adam Richman, what do you hate so much about the world? You're getting paid to be on television and eat food. That's not, like, some of us have to try. Like, even writing and watching about sports is, you have to try. You have to have a certain amount of work ethic to succeed in that. Eating food is literally something you do for survival. How can you be that mad on Twitter.com?
Well, probably the trips to the bathroom after finishing those food challenges.
Oh, that's probably true.
Why.
That's probably where he was tweeting from.
I mean, hey.
Almost undoubtedly.
Right?
Okay, who's
all
up?
Right,
my up, you're
moving
up.
On.
You're up.
Former good pal Andrew Lacey,
yes.
At Andrew Lacey 52. Does DJ get traded within the next year to free up a spot for McMahon and money to extend Blackman?
In a similar vein to how we discussed Blackman trade possibilities, I think this is a possibility because yeah. I also, like Blackman, don't think that DJ's value ever gets any better than where it is right now.
He's been as consistent as possible the last couple of years.
Right.
You don't see it exploding and getting that much better.
Right.
He won a batting title last year, I mean.
Right. And, you know, he plays gold glove caliber defense. He's only won mm-hmm. one gold glove, but he, you know, could have won three or four by this point in his career. DJ is 29. He will also be a free agent in 2019. So that's a thing. I mean, you look at the way all this stuff stacks up, you know, you want to lock up Nolan. Charlie's probably second on that list of who you want to extend, and maybe DJ factors in there as well, but you're not going to have all three.
I really think the DJ would be a great, great trade chip, especially if McMahon keeps hitting.
Yeah.
You have a built-in replacement for DJ LeMahieu right now.
Right. Now, you are going to sacrifice some defensive prowess
of course,
when you get to Ryan McMahon. Ryan McMahon, defense is not his strongest attribute. He's
a
good defender.
Right. First base and outfield.
And I give the Rockies a lot of credit for trying him at second base and having some success with him there. And it's not saying like, oh, you're going to have a big fallout because Ryan McMahon sucks. No, he's a serviceable infielder. DJ LeMahieu is just that good. So you're
going
to have...
And we talked to him. He loves second base.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're going to have some tail off there. But what you theoretically are going to be adding offensively more than makes up for that. DJ is a great hitter, but DJ's not a power guy. Ryan McMahon is. I think this question also becomes way more pointed in the absence of a good Trevor Story. If Trevor Story had come out in 2017 and been Trevor Story from 2016, then I think you're definitely dangling DJ, or you're dangling Trevor Story at that point.
Because you have Brendan Rodgers.
Right, exactly, because Brendan Rodgers, Trevor Story, I was asked this question last night on the radio by Reno Notaro, who was one of our guests a few weeks ago. Trevor Story he's not your guy long term, correct? Basically was the question. I said, I think always Trevor Story has been a placeholder to get the Rockies from Troy Tulowitzki to Brendan Rodgers. I think he's been that bridge, even though Rodgers wasn't in the organization, you know, at a time where they were going to really be plotting out what his long term thing would be when they traded Tulo, yada yada. But right now, Trevor Story's value isn't really there, so DJ's value is that much higher. But that's the thing that Ryan McMahon gives you is an option there.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, and you know, Rodgers on the DL right now, but in Hartford, but coming into next year, he could be easily a top five prospect in all of baseball and potentially could be the number one prospect in all of baseball at the start of next year. So we'll see what happens this offseason. This could be a really fun offseason for the Rockies to see which direction they choose to go. It's up to Jeff Bride. It's up to the Monforts. We'll see, man. It's going to be fun.
These are some of the questions that I love the absolute most. This is from our Austrian-based Rockies fan, Nikki Paumi. And Nikki, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. But he asks a newcomer question, because we have another newcomer question I want to get to as well. How do you distinguish between good pitching and bad batting? And also, how do you recognize great pitching versus weak batting? Which I think is a very insightful question. I also think it's one of those questions that, like, you get to a stage where you kind of think, like, is this a dumb question if I ask this? When you're a baseball fan who's grown up with it, whatever. It's not a dumb question. I think it's a great question. And I also think it's something that people don't really know how to distinguish. So I think it's a good one to talk about.
So the Rockies saw some really, really good pitching this week because they faced Corey Kluber. Corey Kluber is pitching as one of the best stretches in the history of baseball right now over his last 12 starts. He's striking out 40% of the guys that he faces his last 12 starts. That's like
pretty good
full season Kenley Jansen kind of numbers, but as a starting pitcher. And the Rockies saw him. He threw a complete game against them. Eventually ended up getting the win on the walk-off on Tuesday. He was in line for the loss, got the win. Good for him. So when you see guys take the approach they do to Corey Kluber has a very methodical way of pitching. You know exactly what he's going to try to get you out with. It's the breaking ball. He throws it almost 30% of the time, and most of the time, it's not a strike, especially for right-handed batters. You know it's going to be down and away, sometimes into the left-handed batter's box. And yet, you still see crazy, crazy swings and misses on that same pitch. Corey Kluber could tell the batter, yell at him, say, hey, breaking ball coming, not going to be a strike, and they're still going to swing. That's how good his breaking ball is. But you watch it, as a fan, you're like, why can't they just lay off that pitch? You know, it's not a strike. Well, every single person knows it's coming, and yet they still swing, and they still miss. That's good pitching. Now, the Rockies have been dominated by some bad pitchers this year, and that's fine. Like
throughout franchise history?
Yeah, and throughout franchise history, sure. So it's... And when you see guys really struggle against guys who maybe struggle to throw strikes consistently, or they don't throw very hard, like, you know, a Jason Vargas kind of pitcher, you know, like you shake your head and go, man, why can these guys hit this? Like, you know, Mike Leake dominated them. Mike Leake has, you know, he's your definition of like an average pitcher. Like, he's totally fine. Been in the big leagues for close to a decade or whatever now. Probably in
Homer
the big
Bailey dominated
five, six more years. Homer Bailey, exactly. Same kind of guy. Like, they have good enough stuff to be in the big leagues, but you're like, the hell? And this team also beat Clayton Kershaw this year. They hit three home runs against
him.
You know? So that's it. Really, it comes down to, I think, the stuff the pitcher has. If you see it and you're like, man, this guy's throwing like 91 mile an hour cheese up there with like a little bit of spin and they're still getting dominated, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But when someone like Corey Kluber comes in or Clayton Kershaw, you're like, and you see them just dominate, you're like, okay, it wouldn't matter like who was on the mound, you know, it wouldn't matter like who was batting today. That's what's going to happen every single time. They're just going to get dominated.
I also think there was a really good reply to this from Kevin Johnson, who submitted the question about Charlie possibly being a trade bait piece over the offseason. He said, a good place to start is the pitcher hitting his spots? So watch what a catcher calls for and where he sets up. If a pitcher is able to hit that target, that means he's having a good day. His stuff might not be great, but that's why it's not just all about the pitcher on a successful day for a pitcher. It's about how a catcher calls a game, how a catcher manages the lineup, where he's calling for pitches, what pitches he's calling for in given counts, that type of stuff. So that's kind of a basic way that you can tell, all right, this guy is on or not. If a guy is calling for something outside, or he's calling for a pitch to be buried in the dirt, or he's calling for something up and a pitcher just can't hit that spot, then you kind of know if a team is struggling against him, they're not having a very good offensive day. There's also the potential that a guy can be quote-unquote effectively wild, where he's working in the strike zone, things aren't necessarily hitting the targets that he wants to hit, but because of how he's throwing and where that stuff is ending up in the zone, he's just kind of keeping people off balance. But I do think that is a really good place to start. If you see a pitcher and a catcher who seem to be very well on pace with each other and on the same page, also if a pitcher isn't shaking off a catcher much, a catcher calls for a pitch and a pitcher just goes with it, that's how you know they're pretty well in sync. So those are things to keep an eye out for as well.
Good call. All right, from Ryan Freemeyer. Love Ryan Freemeyer. At R. Freemeyer, who's your NL MVP right now?
Easy question. It's Nolan. I do think if I had a vote, I think I would be voting for Nolan right now. But Homer. I also, you know, I do think that there are a lot of guys with very, very good arguments to be in this conversation this year.
The NL MVP race could be a lot of fun this year.
Yeah,
it could
be
real,
be a
real
ton
tight.
Of fun this year. The thing that's so crazy about that race right now, you look at some of the guys who you would think would be in that conversation, and they're not necessarily in the top handful of guys that you would be discussing. Obviously, Paul Goldschmidt is going to be there. He's going to have a very strong claim to that award. But Anthony Rendon probably right now looks like a more of an MVP guy than Bryce Harper, maybe by a little bit, which is weird because I think Harper will still get the higher love, more love for the award because he's Bryce Harper. But, you know, Cody Bellinger, people want to put in that conversation. Justin Turner's had a more MVP-like season than Cody Bellinger, but you kind of wouldn't really think about it that way. Corey Seager's going to be in that conversation. Charlie Blackman, I think, is somebody who is going to get heavy consideration for votes, especially if he keeps it going with what he's done so far. If I didn't have to cast a homer vote, I think I go with either Paul Goldschmidt or Corey Seager. Goldie's just so, and you can't vote for an MVP award based on something like this, but every year he is this guy.
Yeah. It's
he
a lifetime achievement
so
award.
So good, yeah. Basically, yeah. And the fact is, he's been the heart and soul of that franchise for his entire career, and he's being rewarded for it now. And Corey Seager is probably going to be that for the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's only a couple years into his career, but because of the position that he plays, because of what he's able to add offensively, in addition to playing shortstop, I think he would get my other vote.
Yeah. So I talked about this at length last week in the podcast, and I think that there's going to be a lot of players who have teammates take away votes from them. For the Nationals, Rendon and Harper,
and
Daniel Murphy could vie for votes. I think on the Rockies, Nolan Arenado, of course, but I think Charlie Blackman will take some votes away from him. Not a lot, but I think he'll take some. I think the Dodgers have a team full of really solid players. You know, so who knows who's going to rise to the crop that to the top there. And then you got Paul Goldschmidt, you know, so and who could get Jake Lamb take some of his votes away? Who knows? I think, of course, I want Nolan to win. I think Nolan deserves it, especially if the Rockies make the playoffs. It will be because of Nolan Arenado. I think he and Goldschmidt will have very similar numbers by the end of the year, was my argument. And I think people will give it to Nolan because he's never made the playoffs. His defense is extraordinary. Goldschmidt's good on defense, but Nolan's better at a tougher position. So I think if it's going to be between those two, I think Nolan wins. But you look at straight wins above replacement right now, which is a good metric people use now. In the National League, it's Seager, Goldschmidt, Nolan, Justin Turner, Anthony Rendon, Bryce Harper. So if the Dodgers go and become the best regular season team in baseball history, you'd be very, very hard-pressed not to give the MVP award to somebody on that team.
Yeah.
And if anybody on the Dodgers wins the MVP this year, it's going to be Corey Seager. Nobody else deserves it. It's going to be Corey Seager.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Justin Turner's had a great year. Bellinger's had a great year. Corey Seager will win the MVP if a Dodger wins it.
Plus, I think, you know, there's also Cody Bellinger he's already locked up National League Rookie of the Year. So I think voters will probably take that into account too. Like, oh, well, this kid's already going to get an award. He wasn't up for April, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think Corey Seager is probably the odds-on favorite right now because that team is doing just absurd things. Let's stay in the Freemeyer family and in the National League wildcard race, or playoff race, I should say, with the Dodgers and the D-backs and the Rockies. This one pertains elsewhere. Quote, will a National League Central team challenge for the wild card? And if so, who will it be? From at Jay Freemeyer.
Wait, I missed that. Sorry. I was not listening to you.
What, like what, this is the problem in our relationship. You never listen to me anymore.
What did you say?
I'm sorry. What? Just give me a bunch of crap. I mean, not I'm listening sorry. To her enough or something. I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention. Will a National League Central team challenge for the wild card? And if so, who?
Oh God, please don't let it be the Cardinals. Just anybody but the fucking Cardinals. Ugh.
Best fans of baseball, man.
I just hate them so much. They're just so obnoxious. Oh, God.
Best fans of baseball.
They could have Faith Day and ban a bunch of gay people during the playoffs, too. It would be great.
Yeah, not a good couple of weeks PR-wise for
God,
the Cardinals.
God, what a...
Do you think they staged that cat?
Yes.
And they're like, we got to get some positive press. Set this cat loose on the field.
Like, and then we were so close to getting Mike Matheny fired, you know, like... Because that guy...
Yeah. And then he came out and said that Christians are like the most persecuted group in America or something.
Yeah, he's a peach.
I can't imagine that we have many conservative listeners to the podcast, but
we definitely have some.
They hate this episode.
Yeah.
But anyway, will a National League Central team challenge for the wild card? Yesterday, talking with Reno on his show, the point kind of came up, and we've talked about this before. As soon as the Cubs caught the Brewers, I think that was the end of the line for the Brewers. We talked about how they're fading. The Brewers at this point have really dropped off in the National League wildcard race. They are now behind the Cardinals. They are a game back of the Cardinals, but they just haven't played well. They've lost 5 straight. They've lost 6 of their last 10. Cardinals have won 6 straight. They've won 7 of their last 10. They are, right now, I think that's the only team that really looks like it can be a threat. I don't see the Pirates really making much out of their season. They are only a game under 500, but I just don't see that team going on a big run. So it would be the Cardinals, because I think the Cubs are going to have that division locked up.
It's the most competitive division. You got 4 teams within 3 games of each other.
Doesn't
Everything
mean
else
it's
pretty much decided.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's a good division, but it's the most competitive division.
All the Cubs, 4 of those teams are just garbage.
The Cubs are leading that division with a record 9 games worse than the next worst division leader in the National League. The Nationals are 68-45. The Cubs are 59-54. They're leading that division.
Ugh.
The Rockies would be 5 games up on the Cubs, 5.5 games up on the Cubs in the division race if they were in the Central. So it's just not a good division.
No, it's not. And like, yeah, the Cardinals are the hot team right now. They've won 6 in a row. But, man, do you really see the Cardinals doing anything?
No.
Like, they... I mean, I guess they could because they have the best rotation of any of those teams. You know, Lance Lynn's pitching really well this year. Michael Wacha is doing really well. Mike Leake has been a serviceable guy. Martinez is really good stuff. You know, so I guess. But
yeah.
Do you really believe in the Cardinals?
No. But I think if any team was going to do it.
Do you believe in the Brewers? No.
No.
Not the Brewers.
I believe
no pitching.
I believe in the 2018 and beyond Brewers.
Sure.
But not 2017. Yeah.
What is happening outside right now?
What is going on outside?
My God. So Friday's trash day. And so the trash trucks come at 6:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And then they come 5 more times. I have no idea what they're doing the other 4 times. But yeah, I'm going to tell them to shut the hell up right now.
By the way, I just saw the most emo headline that I've ever seen. Did it work? Did they shut up? They're like, oh, sorry, we didn't put silent mode on the trash can today.
God.
Womp,
dude,
womp.
Put it on vibrate, man.
Yeah, put your trash truck on vibrate. This is the most emo headline I've ever seen for a newspaper. It's from the Denver Post. Quote, Greg Holland shaved his head and face after consecutive blown saves, but the Rockies are not worried. Greg, I'm just imagining Greg Holland like a 16-year-old staring into the mirror like, I don't even deserve this beard, shaving his face after blowing 2 straight saves.
He's like cranking My Chemical Romance. Like,
I got to put on some dashboard. Oh, man. Okay.
All right. From Stephen Kennicott at TVGNS. Out of all the pitchers currently in the Rockies organization, both major and minors, who will win a Cy Young first?
Oh, man. First of all, love the optimism that it's just who will win one first, not will the Rockies ever win a Cy Young.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, again, I'm going to go in bold prediction mode, and I'm going to say Riley Pint, not in a Rockies uniform.
Okay.
If we're going with guys who have to win one with the Rockies, I think I'm going to go with John Gray. I love John Gray. He seems like he's figured out a formula to be successful at Coors Field. If he can stay healthy, if he can sustain his runs of success, I think he has the ability to be that dominant.
Mine is Germán Márquez.
Okay, he was going to be my other one. Yeah.
In love with Germán Márquez throughout the course of this year. I love his stuff.
Yeah.
When you can pump 98, 99 whenever he wants it. He's got a back-breaking hook. And he throws his 99 with such a calm delivery. There is not a lot of wasted movement, and the ball just jumps out of his hand. I remember in spring training, I even said, we're watching like a spring training game, and I tweeted, man, because he was still fighting for that fifth spot in the rotation at that point. I said, man, he might have the best stuff of anybody that the Rockies might bring from camp this year.
Yeah.
The best stuff, pure stuff. Was he the best pitcher? No. Did he have the best stuff? In my opinion, yes. And right now I think you're seeing what he can do when given an opportunity, and he is absolutely running with it right now. I absolutely love what he's done lately. He will go toe-to-toe with anybody. He went toe-to-toe with Corey Kluber and outpitched him for six innings.
Yeah.
And Kluber kept going in the game, obviously, but like he outpitched him. You know, like it's something that you see that you're just like, he's on the road at home. It doesn't matter. Like his last six starts, he's got a 2.95. He's striking out more than a batter per inning. He's not walking guys.
Right.
You know, he's not giving up homers. He's not giving up base runners. It's, you know, he's got everything you would want in a dominant starting pitcher.
There is a fantastic piece that our good buddy Jonah Carey put together for CBS Sports a couple of days ago. Nate Kreckman tweeted it last night. We retweeted it. Go read it. It's about the Rockies and why they are successful this year behind that pitching staff. And there's a lot in there about Márquez. It's really, really good stuff. But I agree. I think he would be the other one. This one comes to us from Ryan Tarletsky at Ryan_Tarletsky. Quote, more surprising actor to play a baseball player, Freddie Prinze Jr. or John C. Reilly? Freddie Prinze Jr. was the star of maybe the worst baseball movie ever made, Summer Catch. John C. Reilly, people forget that, was Kevin Costner's catcher in For Love of the Game.
Yes, he was.
So who you got?
Matt LeBlanc. Matt LeBlanc played the pitcher in Ed, I believe, the pitcher, or like the baseball team with the monkey.
With the monkey?
Yeah. Matt LeBlanc.
Okay. Ed.
You can't imagine John C. Reilly as anybody who like plays sports ever. But at the same time, like, you know, he's a catcher. Catchers are weird. That's fine. I can see him there.
Ed on IMDb. As 2.6 out of 10 stars. On Rotten Tomatoes, I did not know this was possible. It has a 0% rating.
What?
A 0%. The average rating is 1.9 out of 10. And it's only 16 reviews, but all 16 reviews are rotten. There are zero fresh reviews for Ed. Of those two, though, I would say John C. Reilly. Freddie Prinze Jr. for a while just took every role that was available to him. John C. Reilly. And John C. Reilly is like the type of guy who would totally be a catcher, too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Like Gary Busey. Like Gary Busey was weird.
Yeah, you know? He was weird. But I love that question. Freddie Prinze Jr. Summer Catch is legitimately among the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. My high school girlfriend made me watch that movie. It came out.
It's not great.
I think it came out when I was a sophomore.
Oh, two, one. Like, I was in high school. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I remember my high school girlfriend making me watch it. I hadn't worked in baseball, obviously, at that time. I was a very big baseball fan, whatever. But I remember as somebody with no experience working in baseball, thinking to myself, there's no way any of this would ever happen with a professional baseball player or a college baseball player or any of it. It was the Cape Cod.
Calm down.
Oh, my God. It was terrible.
He wasn't leaving a perfect game in the middle of, you know, Arlington
Spoiler
Stadium.
Spoiler alert. Jeez Louise,
movie came out,
man.
17 years ago.
Hey, I just saw Heat.
The Heat.
Heat, yeah, I saw that like six years ago.
Well, I want to talk about it now.
Oh, my God. All right. Fire away.
All right, from our friend Colin G, goes by the name Real Baby Driver at Colin G26. How do you massage that gross, awful feeling after the Rockies lose a heartbreaker, i.e. that Tuesday night disaster?
Man,
well, Colin, It starts with Mr. Beam and ends with Mr. Daniels.
I love that question, though, because, man, it is not easy. That game, the walk-off loss to the Indians, I was in a worse mood that night than I remember being in like 3 months. I don't know what it was. That game put me in such a foul mood. But that's the great thing about baseball. When you're a football fan, as we are, you got to wait 6 or 7 days to wash the feeling out. But when you're a baseball fan, you have the opportunity that 15 hours later, your team can come back, shock an opponent in the ninth inning, and win a ball game. That's what the Rockies did the next day. Thank God it was a day game, or else you would have had to wait another 6 hours. But that's the nice thing about baseball. But, you know, I think in all reality, we've just become so used to it that I don't really know how you get rid of it. We just kind of live with it.
You know what's funny? I was more angry during last week's day game against the Mets.
Yeah, that game
when
was
they
infuriating.
When they weren't winning, and I was like, how can you expect to be a playoff contender and not – you know, not win a series against this team who's actively trying to lose, blah, blah, blah. And then they walked it off, and I was just like,
yeah.
Good.
Yep.
Like, it was one of those kind of things where I just kind of, like, centered for, like, a second and go,
right.
All right, fine.
All right, good, fine. You know. Justin Dean, at @golf_Lundgren, another longtime PDP fan. This is a question that especially applies to you. Quote,
sure.
How the hell do you get so good at looking up stats?
Well, I work for Stats LLC, so I do get paid for it.
Is it Stats LLC now and not Stats Inc? They changed.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure when that changed. I always thought it was Stats Inc, but
yeah, all my
paychecks say Stats LLC. So I don't know. It was I'm not sure when it changed, but we have a lot of proprietary databases. We have a thing called Stats Pass, which has it's basically a full like basically you know Baseball Reference, you know, Football Reference, Basketball, whatever, all those reference pages. We have all of those on our own that go even farther in depth for every single sport, even the minor leagues, even Japanese baseball. We can go look through all that stuff and like do advanced searches and go through all history. And then we have something else called IRC, our Internal Research Center, that has all these different computer processes that you can run. So like, hey, you know, can you find out who's got the most, you know, two homer games in Rockies history? Hey, can you find out when was the last time a Rockies pitcher had an ERA under 2 over a 10-start span?
That when was the last time, for example, a baseball game ended in which the leadoff man hit a homer and nobody else scored the entire game, which looked like it was going to be the case Tuesday in Cleveland? I texted you. You texted back and said it's never happened to the Indians before, and it didn't end up happening, but still.
No. Yeah, and it was funny that that game, all the runs scored on the first 2 pitches and the last 2 pitches.
Yeah, that was weird.
So say something right now. What do you want to find out for the Rockies? See if I can figure it out quickly.
Who is the best Big Spoon? No. what switch hitter has the most home runs in Rockies history?
All right, so I'll go to Stats Pass. I will go to Advanced Search. I will select Franchise, Colorado Rockies. I will go All Time. I will go Totals During Time Span. Home runs, I will choose select batting side, switch hitter. The answer is Nathy Perez with 43.
What?
Nathy
really?
Perez, 43 home runs.
My God.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed that.
The top five, actually only 7 guys have ever hit 10 homers as a switch hitter. Nathy Perez, 43. Dexter Fowler with 40. Greg Norton with 26.
Wow.
Sir Walter of Weiss with 14, Jason Bates with 12, and then J.D. Clauser and Howard Johnson tied with 10 apiece.
It is actually very surprising that Dex does not top that list.
Yeah.
I guess once your GM sours on you and ships you out of town for Jordan Lyles and Brandon Barnes, you kind of lose the...
Nathy Perez played literally one more game with the Rockies than Dexter Fowler did. One more game. 68-667. Yeah. But
that's
he had
crazy.
500 more bats, probably because Dexter walked a lot more. Yeah, Dexter walked 200 times more.
Nathy Perez.
Oh,
my God.
Funny, like, only 22 switch hitters have ever hit a home run with the Rockies.
Huh. Who knew?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
See? So there you go.
There we go. It's all about reps, you know? Like,
exactly.
You're
good
at it because you've done it a bajillion times.
And when I'm doing it, usually through a live broadcast or a whip around that we have on FS1 or, you know, during a pre and post game show. So when we're doing stuff like that, I've got to find things out very, very quickly and do it
right.
Correctly. Last night, This is a good example here. We were doing MLB Whip Around, and our hosts were Kevin Burkhardt was the host. We had Eric Karras and Dontrell Willis on the show. And we're getting live updates of games happening in real time because the West Coast games were still going on. It was the Orioles and A's, I think. Trey Mancini hit his 20th homer in the season. He's a rookie for the Orioles.
Right.
So I was saying, oh, wonder how many, what's the rookie record for Orioles home runs? Whatever, looked it up. And I looked it up, and I saw on the list that it spit out that he was the first Orioles rookie with 20 homers in a season since Cal Ripken. Like,
wow.
Like, oh, that's like that's pretty cool. So,
Trey Mancini is Cal Ripken, basically.
Yeah, so during the show, we're in the middle of a block, in the middle of a chat, and I get in Kevin Burkhardt's ear, and I say, hey, next update, Trey Mancini, first Orioles rookie with 20 homers in a season since Cal Ripken. And he repeats that on air, and he's like, oh, damn, that was pretty cool. So you got to be
– that's a good stat.
Like, one step ahead of these kind of things when you're doing, like, a live show, so –
I also, the other day when the Mets were in town, my good buddy Mike Passanisi, who I worked with, he was the lead broadcaster with the AA Altoona Curve.
Mike Passanisi.
Hey, put my tweet on the TV. Mike now works with the New York Mets. I was his fellow radio guy in AA in 2012. Mike and I were talking about how much better and more fulfilling it is when the guys who worked with you or worked under you at a job go on to have success. And I said, like with you and like with my assistant in 2011, James Smythe, who we've had on the podcast before, James is a statistician for the Yes Network, and, you know, gets his name dropped by Michael Kay all the time, same way Anthony with Kevin Burkhardt and the guys on FS1.
Yep.
That's so much cooler than, like, having personal success when people that you, like, actually love and care about go on to have success.
Hey.
So it makes me pretty pumped.
Hey.
Let's go with a couple of pop culture ones.
Sure.
Back-to-back questions, rapid fire, from Dusty O'Connell and from good old Seamus. Dusty O'Connell is at Dusty O'Connell. Good old Seamus is at Stubby McGee 21. Number one, who you got? House Stark, House Targaryen, House Lannister, or other? And
I've
I'm going to say...
seen an episode of Game of Thrones. I'm okay. Sorry, I haven't. I'm
good.
Sorry.
Me neither.
Yeah.
The most I know about Game of Thrones is the Staten Island Yankees put on a Game of Thrones night a couple years ago, and I had to write the promo preview for it because they were actually having whatever the hell the dude's name is who created Game of Thrones that I already forgot.
George R. R. Martin.
George R. R. Martin. He was coming up to Staten Island to go to the game because he grew up in Staten Island. That's literally the most I know about Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It's not that I think I'm better than it or better than people who watch it. I never had HBO One. It's not really my thing. I don't really like fantasy stuff like that. And my ex-girlfriend really, really liked it. And I'm like, yeah, pass.
The one that I live by?
Yep.
Gross.
Yep. Well.
Gross.
All right, go on.
Okay, number two. What is a more watchable show, Full House or Fuller House? I'll await your answer. I'm going to start with an addendum.
Okay.
And again, this is the episode that our conservative listeners will hate.
Hooba.
I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the new White House press secretary,
sure,
looks like if they were going to make the most depressing, worst remake of Full House ever, like when they grow up, they're already divorced multiple times, they're losing jobs, whatever, I think she would play DJ. She would play like late 40s, early 50s,
well,
DJ.
They could have had like real
ever.
Life Jody Sweetin when she was, you know, doing meth a lot.
Like actual, yeah.
Like
Jody
actual
Sweetin's
meth
actual
lot.
Life. Yeah. I don't know though. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, every time I see her, I'm like, you're like a bizarro world sad DJ
like,
from Full House.
Fuller House was not bad at all. Like you watch old Full House, like you're like, oh, it's the nostalgia factor. It didn't really hold up.
No, it's terrible.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's terrible.
So I don't know. It's
okay, so Fuller House. Fuller House also has friend of the podcast, Hunter Pence.
Yeah, that's true.
I watched the very first episode.
People actually legitimately liked it. Like, it's like one of the most streamed shows on Netflix in their history. So good for them. All right, we've been for about an hour here. Let's roll some rapid fire through all of Oliver's questions.
We got still some really good ones. Well, let me get to a couple that I just really wanted to address really quick. Number one from Stephen Mooney at Stephen J. Mooney. Explain player to be named later in the Lucroy deal. I read that all MLB and DL players aren't eligible. All others are game. He followed up and said, can we protect some guys like Brendan Rodgers, Ryan McMahon, Riley Pine, etc.? Does the player to be named later have to be mutually agreed upon? Do they have to meet statistical restraints? Basically what happens is, and I ran this by a major league scout last night because I kind of wanted to get the full scope of this, but pretty much what happens is when you agree to the framework of a deal, you agree with the other organization to a list of players that can then be included as the player to be named later. So the Rockies went to the Texas Rangers. proposed a deal with, let's say, five players. I don't know how many are on this list, but five players of a similar stature in the organization. The Rangers say, yeah, we're good with those guys. We'll agree to who it is later. I assume the reasoning behind that is now the Rangers can monitor those players for the rest of the season, and then they can decide who they want to complete that deal. But that's basically the way that it works. So it's not that the organization who is trading the asset away and acquiring the player to be named later gets to go through the opposing organization and just pick somebody. There is a set group of guys who are part of that deal.
Well, there's a funny story about that in 2008 when the Indians traded CC Sabathia to the Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah. There was a player to be named later in it, and there was a list of players, and if Sabathia pitched the Brewers to the playoffs, the Brewers made the playoffs this year, it could be a certain guy, and if he didn't make the playoffs, it would be this other group of guys. Well, the Brewers made the playoffs that year thanks to CC Sabathia, and the player to be named later turned out to be Michael Brantley, who has been an all-star a couple times for the Indians, one of the better players when he's healthy in the American League. So, but it was only a contingent on the Brewers making the playoffs in 2008. They did. The Indians got Michael Brantley, so turned out to be good because the main prospect in that deal was Matt LaPorta.
Yeah,
he
Matt
out spectacularly.
He was supposed to be amazing,
too.
He was
supposed to be
he never did anything.
The bee's knees, as it were.
Yeah. Okay, another one. From at Chris J. Finlay, who is, we talked about our Austrian fan earlier. Chris is our UK bureau chief. He resides on the Isle of Man. I assume he actually resides there, unless it's just the coolest place in the United Kingdom that he could put as his location. But anyway, Chris says, quote, as a newcomer to the sport, I'd like to hear something about the pros and cons of sidearm pitchers now that the Rocks have one and Pat Neshek.
Well, sidearm pitching, it does not put as much strain on your arm as pitching overhand. Like, basically, throwing overhand is one of the worst things you can ever do for your body. It's just so unnatural.
Unless you read The Arm by Jeff Passan, which he refutes that. But that has been conventional wisdom for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fine. Maybe I'm just old fuddy-duddy. I love just RBI and pitcher wins, you know?
Irresponsible, comma, fake news, 2 exclamation points.
Yeah. I mean, it adds a huge element of deception
exactly.
in your pitches, especially if you're same handedness to the same handedness of the batter. So right on right, Pat Neshek will be very, very tough on righties in theory because of the funky arm angle. When you're playing baseball, you're not used to seeing guys come from that kind of angle from their pitching. Usually it's overhand or three quarters or whatever, but the more sidearm you get, the more uncomfortable you make the batter. And the more uncomfortable you make the batter, the more chance you have of getting him out.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Pitching coaches and managers and broadcasters will talk a lot about changing eye levels for hitters, making hitters change their eye levels. That's another thing that sidearm pitching does. When you're used to seeing everybody else come over the top, and then all of a sudden you have to try to pick up a ball that's coming out of a sidearmer's hand or coming out of a submariner's hand, which is even more difficult, guys who almost throw underhand, that's exceedingly difficult. Especially if you go from a game where you're facing, let's just say, for an example, had the Rockies had Jorge De La Rosa this year, you're going from like a, not a soft tossing lefty, but a lefty who's more spotting up, hitting his spots and basing his stuff on command and control. Now he's out of the bullpen. He's actually throwing exceedingly hard.
95, 96.
Yeah. But as a starter, let's say you go from him as a lefty to then a right-handed sidearming Pat Neshek. That's really tough to adjust to in the middle of a game. So
like Kyle Freeland. I mean,
right,
Kyle Freeland to Pat Neshek. Yeah.
But again, I think it's a great question. And another question that I think people are probably, I don't know really how this works. Same as with the player to be named question.
Look at Pat Neshek's career line. Lefties are OPS of 723, which is still not very good for them. But, you know,
right.
It's 723 against left-handed batters. 551 against righties with a 188 average career against right-handed batters for Pat Neshek. So you can see why like he's that much more effective against right-handers with that crazy funky motion that he has.
Okay, three more. One I want to get to is a long one. It's an email form from Nick Tuda. And Nick says, as much as I'm excited about the Rockies this season, I also want to know what your thoughts are and how many of contentions we can expect out of this current Rockies club. What are some moves you think the Rockies can do to extend that window, to keep our young arms fresh in the years to come? Should we go back to what worked well a few years back with a four-man rotation and the 75 pitch count? And sarcasm aside, that one was the sarcasm part,
clearly,
do you think the young staff will improve or regress in the coming year? Last aspect of the question, what do you think the Rockies' chances are of keeping both Nolan and Blackman, which we've addressed a little bit in free agency? I think they'll keep one of those two guys. I think it'll be Nolan. Yeah. Everything else, the window of contention, moves, improvement or regression, etc.
Boy, that's a lot. That's a lot to that one. I would say, obviously, with a young pitching staff getting their feet wet in the big leagues for the first time, as the Rockies pretty much are this season, you expect them to grow. That's never uniformly the case. The path to big leagues and the path to a successful career is never linear. So if you see like these guys coming up, Marquez, Sensatella, Freeland, Hoffman, they may play much better next year, or two of them may regress. Two of them may become all-stars. One of them may fall back into obscurity. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't mean they can't bounce back in 2 years, because they are still so young. They're still under team control. So even if someone doesn't pitch as well next year, there's still opportunity for them to stick around and become a contributing factor to this team, and then maybe 2019 or 2020.
I think it's great. Okay, one more, and then we'll roll through some of Oliver's questions. Our buddy Rio, who pissed off a whole lot of Twitter yesterday, this is a good one to close on. What are your thoughts on the Players' Weekend uniforms, not just the Rockies, but the rest of Major League Baseball? So if you missed it, Major League Baseball is having players roll out these special uniforms that they can put nicknames on the back of for MLB Players Weekend, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. I believe it is the
end
last
of August
weekend in August. Yeah, August 25th to the 27th. Brightly uniformed jerseys and hats, and players can put nicknames on the back of their jerseys. The Rockies nicknames are all out there. Some of the best around baseball. Kyle Seager is going to go as Corey's brother.
Awesome.
It's his nickname, which is fantastic.
And Corey Seager's going as Seager.
Seager. there are some really, really good ones out there, though. The Rockies, there are a handful of good ones from the Rocky side. They're not great. John Gray will be going as Gray Wolf. Charlie Blackman, as you would imagine, will be going as Chuck Nasty. Mark Reynolds will be going as Sheriff, as in the Sheriff of Swattingham.
That's awesome.
Which is outstanding. But your thoughts on this?
I love it. And
me too.
Yeah, there's no reason to hate them. People go, "Oh, the jerseys suck." Who cares? Who cares if the jerseys suck? Like, that's the whole point. Is that they look like little league jerseys. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they're like softball tops.
Yeah, that's the entire point of the entire weekend. So
yeah.
It's nice to see the Major League Baseball giving their players a chance to be creative, unlike the NFL,
yes. Exactly. Who
tries to squash all creativity at
all
at
individual
first
expression
glance.
Yeah.
So. But also at the same time, you realize that a lot of people who play baseball really aren't that interesting.
Right.
Or really aren't all that funny.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true.
Which is fine. That's you don't have to be a cut-up to be a good athlete. And usually good athletes aren't necessarily the funniest guys, most entertaining humans. But giving the opportunity to the people who actually are, I like it a lot. There's nothing bad can come of this.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the contrast of this with the NFL. Everybody talks about Major League Baseball doesn't bring in young fans, it doesn't attract kids, it doesn't whatever, which is, I think, a way overblown storyline, A. But no,
there's truth to it, but you're right.
There is truth to it, but also Major League Baseball never seems to slough off in its older fan base either. And I think people just come to baseball as a thing that their fandom gravitates toward later in life in a lot of cases. But anyway, we're not really missing out on that many elite athletes in baseball either. And I think what this does, it does give kids something to look at and go, that's pretty fun. Baseball can be pretty cool, in direct contrast to the NFL. The NFL, it's like, oh, we'll have one weekend where guys can wear messages on their shoes or something like that, which I think they did last year for the first time ever.
But any other time, you get fined $13,000.
Right. Exactly. Don't ever express your opinion ever, lest you be blackballed in the NFL for having a mind that isn't a hive mind. So I think it's really cool. But I also do agree that I think some dudes are super boring. DJ LeMay is just going to go by DJ. Jake McGee is just going to go by
Jake. He could have got his high pockets. Like,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
God.
Yeah, so
And Dexter not going as Daddy Long Legs, like,
yeah, just dumb. But some of them are pretty good.
Some of them are great. Yeah.
They're really not bad. All right, some Oliver ones, fire away.
All right. Know anybody who needs a room in Denver starting October 1st? My roommate just bought a house.
Yeah, so get in touch. PurpleDinosaurPodcast@gmail.com. If you need a place to stay, Oliver can get you hooked up. We'll hook you up with Oliver.
Cool. Why aren't we going out to bars and meeting ladies, Tyler Mon?
Yeah, no, that's not gonna happen.
All right. Will the Dodgers and Diamondbacks be this good next year?
Yeah, I do think they will. The Dodgers will be different. They're not going to have – well, they might have Yu Darvish. They might throw a bunch of money at him. I don't think they will. But the D-backs, I think the D-backs are built for a while to be pretty good.
All right. Why did the NL West have to be so damn good this year? What the fuck?
Because everybody hates us and we can't have happiness.
All right. Why didn't we DM Oliver about AskPDP? Usually that's our thing. We got to DM
well- – And that's the thing. Like, he just happened to sign on to Twitter and see. Yeah, so it's obviously that he just knows. It's like putting up the bat signal again.
You know what? Like, I think we have like a wavelength between us.
Right. That's yeah. Great. I agree.
All right. Will you be at the game Wednesday? Because he will be.
I got to, is it a day game on Wednesday? I got, I'm supposed to go see St. Paul and the Broken Bones Wednesday night.
I can look real quick.
Here. I'm doing the same. It's a night game. So no, I won't. I responded last night, Oliver, and said maybe, but I will not.
Why isn't Raimel Tapia an everyday player yet?
Whew, man. I don't know.
That's a great question.
I wish I had an answer to that, and I don't.
Yeah. Carlos Gonzalez has been one of the worst hitters in baseball this year. Raimel Tapia, he's got a chance to break out. He hasn't quite done it yet, but he's been very, very solid all season long when given an opportunity. I think everyone here is just expecting Cargo to all of a sudden just be Cargo again, and yeah, it's August 11th, you know, and he's still one of the worst hitters in baseball. I can't see it. But, again, at the same time, I don't see them benching him in September if the team's fighting for a playoff spot. I know they like his defense a lot. His defense more than Raimel Tapia's. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think he's going to be in there. And just going to hope they can get anything from him at all.
It's also strange to me that Tapia is only 5 of 7 in stolen bases, because I swear to God I've seen him swipe 17 bags already this year.
This is actually a good question here. Will all the focus on the Broncos preseason be good or bad for the Rockies?
Of
course,
you
focus
know,
being just the Denver media markets, of course. Not anybody else who
no. Because the Rockies are still bringing out 40,000 to 45,000 a night at Coors Field.
And Tyler's great this year.
Yeah. I don't know if it's really going to have much of an effect. I will say I have been pretty impressed by the media contingents when I've gone to Coors Field most nights as of late, that there are organizations that are paying attention that generally by now do not pay attention. I don't think it'll really have much of an effect. If it does have any effect, I think the historically what it's been is the Nick Hundleys of the world yelling at Mark Kislas, now you show up because we're good, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So if you can build that into an us against the world, party deck against the world type of mentality, then maybe that does something for you. I don't think it'll have much of a buy our shirts, Purple Dinosaur Podcast at bigcartel.com. I don't think it'll have much of an effect, but if it does, maybe it gives you a chip on your shoulder. It's just a bummer that it's going to have to be a chip on your shoulder going against the media in your own town.
Yep.
Not as we're being disrespected nationally, but like we're being disrespected everywhere.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's most all of those questions. Those are the good ones. So
yeah, those are good.
It's been,
man,
it's been
this
an hour
is
and 10
fun
minutes.
Fun episode. Yeah. Very fun episode. As noted, buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. Get in touch with the show, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. I don't think we have any loose ends to tie up. I'm sure we've forgotten about something. Oh, if you are in a band or if you know of a band or anything else and you want your music leading off and closing this podcast, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with your friends who are in bands. Get in touch with your, you know, whatever. My best friend is dating a 45-year-old dude who's in a band, which, mother of God. But if you
been there,
know
buddy.
A band or those types of things, get in touch.
Hey, Oliver sent one. He says, why haven't you played This Side of Paradise on the show yet? And he tweeted us an Ask PDP question with a Bandcamp link. So,
which I thought that we had This Side of Paradise, correct?
Yes.
I thought that we had played them at some point.
Then tell Oliver.
Okay. Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
Cool.
That's the start of a good Blues Traveler song. Which is a sentence that only applied in 1996.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Not anymore. So that's it. Okay.
Fire
shirts.
Guys.
Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, great questions. Nice work, everybody. We love you. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.